Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, oh God. Letting go, oh God.
Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is September 12th, 2018. If you're not listening to it at 7 o'clock on that date, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. I'm Dr. Five, and with us today we have a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, you can call me just by my God-given name, let's say, Thomas Payne.
Tom Payne?
Yes.
That can't be right.
I'm the voice of common sense in Knoxville.
Oh, very good.
At least I think so.
Have you done any famous writing yet?
Not yet. Unless you want to talk about crystal structures of some chemicals, then no.
No, probably not.
Yeah. And I probably just, more interesting than the Bible, though.
And, oh, really? You'd be able to tell us about the Bible? But aren't you an atheist?
Yes, I'm an atheist.
How can you possibly tell us about the Bible? So you're saying that some atheists might actually know the Bible?
I would say most atheists out there probably know the Bible better than 90% of the Christians.
That's a pretty good claim, and 90% is a large number. But I grew up in a Christian household myself, and most atheists have, not necessarily a Christian household, but an Islamic household, a Hindu household, Buddhist household. But then they've learned that the claims of these religions are not founded on any kind of reliable evidence, which is what got me to leave Christianity. Can you tell us a little bit about your deconversion before we get into the Bible?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I grew up in a small town. The Bible church was a big part of our lives, a big family. My father's parents were Catholic, and then my mother's parents were non-denominational. They didn't really go to church too often, take the Bible seriously. But for some reason, my parents ended up at a Pentecostal church, a very small Pentecostal church, waving the hands, speaking in tongues, knocka, 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 whatever, all that stuff. People getting healed and then falling down and taking a nap, which, to be honest, a side note, that was one of the best parts of the church, because anytime I was tired, I could just go up, get prayed for, and then fall asleep on the floor. So that was pretty nice.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that kind of got me away from the religion itself was seeing all of the hypocrisy in the church. So you would have people acting one way in the church, and then even the elders and the pastors and all these other things in the show, and then after church was over, it was all gone.
Really?
Yes.
That's one of the reasons my mom wouldn't take us to church when I was a kid. She said they were full of hypocrites. I asked her several times about that, and she says, well, they profess to believe in Jesus and his works and what he does, and when they're at church, they talk about it all the time. You know, they make sure that they know the precepts, but as soon as they leave church, you know, it all goes out the window. She says they don't live the life. And I guess I had to agree with her. I knew quite a few of the people after going to church for a while, and yeah. That's the way it was. There's an old, I was a Baptist, and there's an old saying about Baptists. This is, if you invite a Baptist friend to go fishing with you, make sure you invite two Baptist friends. Because if you invite one, they'll drink all your beer.
Yeah, I actually heard that from my professor.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if they're not around another Christian, they will try to walk the walk a little bit, at least give it lip service. But if they're alone, they, you know, all that just goes out the window. But that's just a joke. And I don't certainly believe it for everyone, but it certainly seemed to be the case where when I was raised.
Yeah, and there was another point to the church that I kind of knew that it wasn't from a higher power. For some reason, God was always on the same schedule as worship and praise and the message, and they always had something unprofound to say to everyone.
Right.
And so you would have this intense music in the beginning, and people were dancing, sweating. They were raising their hands up, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, God wanted the lights down. Mm-hmm. It got a little romantic.
Yeah.
The music slowed down a little bit, and then the preacher would say, "Can you feel the presence of the Lord?"
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I guess we were supposed to.
It's choreographed. Yeah, there's a saying that you can do a Google search for spiritual manipulation. You'll find out that that's what preachers do to you on Sunday. If you think about it, you've never seen the movie Old Yeller, have you?
Yeah, of course.
You have?
Yeah.
Hollywood is very good at manipulating you spiritually, and what I mean by it, you walk into this theater, you get some popcorn, you sit down, and you're in a kind of an even-keel frame of mind. But by the end of the movie, with all the music and the situations and all of the stuff that they relay to you during the course of a couple hours, at the end of it, they can have you in tears.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can have you on your feet and cheering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a way that Hollywood is manipulating you, or your spirit, let's say, your emotions, to get the desired response. And the preachers know damn well what the desired response is. They want you to, one, feel the spirit. They want you, two, to feel humble, and three, feel generous.
Yes.
So that you will support them and support the church. And believe me, it is choreographed. They know very well what they're doing and what to do to get you in that mood.
Yeah, there was this one documentary that really kind of hit it home, and it was a 1970s documentary, I believe. Have you seen Mojo?
Yes.
Mojo. Oh, man, that guy put on a show, and that's exactly what it is, and I think that's what it still is today. It's a show, a spectacle, to elicit some type of emotion. And when you have this feeling, this personal experience in the church, when you have this feeling, it's a real feeling. It's a biological response.
Yeah.
However, it can be triggered by many, many things. Environmental stimuli of a lot,
uh-huh.
Not a spirit from some other plane of existence.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it was Mojo or the one I'm thinking about is about a child preacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Okay, I'm thinking it was a different name.
No, it's Majo. It's Mary plus Joseph. Yeah, so it's M-A-J-A-O.
Yeah, I was thinking Mojo wasn't it, but I didn't know what it was. But anyway, yes, if you get a chance to see that movie, do. It explains a lot. This is a former preacher, a child preacher, who was raised in the Christian church to be a preacher and trained very specifically about how to get those responses out of its audience so that they could then take it on the road as a show and get money from crowds. And then later on in life, he realizes it's all, I mean, what harm he's doing to the people that are out there and believing all this stuff. So he makes a movie and explains all of it and how it's all geared to get your money and move on.
Yeah. And if you watch the documentary, the interesting part is he really doesn't – I don't think he knows anything about the Bible or what's in the Bible, because he doesn't use it when he's preaching. He just says, "Can you feel God? Do you feel him right now? He loves you. He's looking for you. He wants you. Reach out your hands for God. And then give me $10 after the show."
Yeah,
so,
right. Marjo. That's what it is. But Mary and Joseph, Marjo.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's M-A-R-J-O-E. So Marjo Gortner. You can look up his name on Wikipedia, and it will tell you all about him. He's in his 70s or 80s now.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Very old.
Very interesting guy. I would definitely like to have a drink with him back in the day, but now he's an old man, and maybe he's not even around. So.
You never know. Anyway, so you were going to tell us a little bit about the Bible?
Yeah. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of apologetics, and sometimes I have to speak with the street preachers that are on campus. And one of the biggest claims that these street preachers or Christian apologetists make is morality. And there's a lot of ways we could talk about morality. We could talk about the slavery in the Bible. We could talk about rape, incest in the Bible. We could talk about genocide and all these horrible treatment of women and not being equal to men. But I'm just going to go a little simpler. I'm just going to analyze the Ten Commandments and what are the Ten Commandments exactly in the Bible? And I kind of stole this, not really stole, but influenced heavily by this YouTuber, 43 Alley. Mm-hmm. So if you want to see that, okay. Just look up 43 Alley, Ten
Give me just a second. We got a phone call while you were introing that. And Wombat should be on the line with us. Are you there, Wombat? Hey, very good.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, you're on.
Wombat's
so
here.
This is Wombat. He's my regular co-host. And our guest tonight is Thomas Paine, believe it or not. And he's going to...
Oh, what?
Yes, he was going to... Sorry?
From the dead?
No, oh, not exactly from the dead. I've reincarnated a few times.
Right.
And I ended up in Knoxville. Yeah.
He was a roach for a couple years.
Yeah.
Now, we're having a hard time hearing
the sloth
you.
Was the best part.
Up here.
I like being a sloth.
Okay. Go ahead and get back into what you were talking about, Ten Commandments and Genesis.
Okay, yeah. We're going to talk about Exodus a little bit and the Ten Commandments and how Ten Commandments itself not only proves that the Bible is not a source of morality, let alone God, but it's also, it has a lot of clues that it was a myth created by ignorant people a long time ago. And so before we get started, I would like to clarify what the Ten Commandments are. They were commandments spoken by Yahweh to Moses, and then commanded by Moses to be written on stones, and then also to be called the Ten Commandments in the Bible. And so a lot of people have this idea of the Ten Commandments that are on monuments and listed everywhere and decorations of church, and that's Exodus 20. And if you look up all the Ten Commandments, they're the ones we've heard all before. Know their gods before me, no graven images. This one obviously is already ruined by the Catholic Church, so maybe God doesn't like Catholics, or at least the Exodus God. Do not use the Lord's name in vain. I ruin that all the time, every day. Remember the Sabbath, even though the Sabbath technically in this culture was probably Saturday and not Sunday. Honor your parents, that's always a good one to do, except if they're horrible people, then that's probably not a good commandment to uphold. Do not kill. Instead of murder, do not kill. Obviously, the Bible's rampant with killing. They didn't follow that. Adultery is wrong. Do not steal. Don't lie. And don't covet things, especially if your neighbor owns a donkey of some kind. So that one's actually still vital today. But those are the ones we're used to hearing. But those were actually not written on a tablet at all. They were kind of like a dialogue or a narrative in Exodus 20.
What?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Are you saying there's more than one set of Ten Commandments?
There's actually three sets. This was the first one, not on stone, but there's three sets, and we'll see what happens. So if you move a couple chapters over to Exodus 24, you see that Moses went up to the mountain because commanded by God for 40 days and 40 nights. And this is another clue, our first clue today, that the Bible is created by ignorant people, and it's a myth because you hear these numbers a lot in the Bible, 40 days, 40 nights. I don't know where they come from. I don't know what they mean, some type of numerology BS. But a lot of things happen to Moses, 40 days, 40 nights. I don't know why. Okay, so while he is up there talking to God, writing down stuff on stone, which is probably very hard, the people, for some reason, they wanted to worship a new god. So Aaron gave him another god to worship, and they were happy because they need to worship something. I have no idea why, but they do. And for some reason, they had a lot of gold around to make a god. Bad use of gold, but whatever. Then Moses comes down because God told him, hey, your people are partying too hard. It's not looking good. And instead of stopping them in a well-mannered way, he gets really angry, and this breaks the tablets. They're in pieces, all over in pieces. Written by an almighty being, and he doesn't respect them. Not to mention the upper body strength of climbing down the mountain with two heavy tablets, probably as large.
How old was he, too?
I don't know. He was probably like 700 or something by now.
Yeah.
He was good genes, Moses. Good genes. And so he breaks these crucial, crucial moral tablets from God. We don't know what's on the tablets. And then he says, you know what? I'm really pissed. I'm pissed at all of you. So what would I do? Would I teach you what's wrong? Would I teach you anything about life and morals that I just learned from God? I had this long conversation. No, he says, I'm going to kill a lot of you because you guys deserved it, and like 3,000 people died.
Well, he had people kill their own families, kill their brothers, anybody who disagreed with him. He was trying to punish the crowd, basically, and he committed like half a genocide just – right out of the gate.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, J.K. Rowling writing a book and then ripping into shreds and getting so angry and then orders?
I can more likely believe Pat Robertson doing it. And for the same reason Moses is doing it.
I'm absolutely certain that Pat Robertson is a cyborg. That dude's still around, and I don't know why.
Yeah, we don't want to start any new conspiracy theories.
I was joking. He's not a cyborg, but he is a very strange man. Okay, so after all the genocide of the people and the party, and who knows what type of drugs they're having there, probably some good ones if they're having a good time, Moses decides to go back up the mountain because God wants him to. And so again, he stays there 40 days and 40 nights. And then this is when he writes down all the new commandments. And he takes his time with them when he comes back down. And guess what they are? They're very, very different.
You would think God would be able to remember what the old ones were.
Yeah.
And give him to him again.
You would think
why would
so.
He, you know, is he relying on memory? Is he not talking to God when he goes up there?
Yeah. I mean, you would think that God not only could remember them, but he could just produce them. He did create the earth. He could create stone.
Yeah. Well, according to the Bible, and you're probably getting to this, he did write them, use the finger of God to write them on the stone on the side of the mountain, and then Moses carved them out of the mountain.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't see that part.
Well, that was at least, I'm pretty sure it was in the Bible, but I know it was in Cecil B. DeMille's movie. But I'm pretty sure it was in the Bible as well. But anyway, so we've got two versions of the Ten Commandments so far.
Yeah, we got two versions. One wasn't ever written down. One was written down and now broken and shattered into pieces, unrecognizable. But this one took his time. He's very careful. Probably grabbed some bubble wrap from CVC that was up there in the mountain. Make sure that this was
from the bubble wrap plant.
Yes, from the bubble wrap plant. And so let's just take a little bit of look at these Ten Commandments, the new ones, the new and improved ones. Again, God's really jealous. It says it a bunch in the Bible. So the first one, as you may guess, is do not worship any other gods. Just worship me because I'm jealous. I'm really, really jealous. Mm-hmm. Don't worship me. And so that's good. That's a very secure God. He definitely likes a little bit of worship, and he doesn't need it, but he likes mm-hmm. it, probably.
Kind of like Trump.
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
I wasn't going to mention any politics, but mm-hmm. okay. Thou shalt not make no molten gods. Again, a very jealous thing to do. Let's not have this calf fiasco again, a golden calf or whatever idol yeah. they made. The Feast of Unleavened Bread must be kept. I don't know what this is, but it's some Jewish holiday, some feast where they celebrate, I don't really know, but...
The Feast of the Leavened Bread.
Unleavened
Bread.
Yes, it's a forgotten holiday. We should definitely put it on our calendars. It's probably a good time.
If it gets me off of work, hey.
Yeah. And then there's a... Thou openest the matrix of mind and firstling among thy cattle, whether ox or sheep, that is male. So let's sacrifice the first born of a cattle or a sheep or that is actually male. Another hint that one, God's kind of a murderer. He likes blood, and especially if it's burning. And he's also favors men, so he might be really into men. So we don't know that. Dumbledore was. That's right here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the sixth day, commandment number five, the sixth day thou shalt not work. So rest on the seventh. We all can like that one. I wish I could rest every day. But
Several more days anyway.
Yeah, at least. Sixth one, observe the feast of weeks and the first fruits of wheat harvest. So this probably means another holiday. So that's cool. And let's eat wheat. And maybe this was the inspiration of Wheaties, the cereal. But again, just like let's like pay attention to the harvest. I guess that's in a lot of other religions and stuff, food, the goddess of the harvest and all that.
Yeah.
And then thrice a year, all your men appear before the Lord, the God of Israel. I have no idea what that means. Maybe like a Mecca of some kind. Let's meet three times. Or maybe it's just like, you know, a book club.
I'd say it's that the preachers want the men to show up at a minimum of three times a year. Okay. And I think a lot of these sacrifices are are such that they, the farmers or the shepherds or whatever, will bring their sacrifices to the temple, sacrifice them there, and then of course who gets the refuse? Yeah, of it, the leftovers, you know, the priests get the wheat, they get the meat, they get any kind of currency they may want to sacrifice in the name of God. So, you know, priests may have it pretty good.
Yeah, so wherever they're at.
They can say, God wants you to bring us your produce, basically.
Yeah. Well, unless you're, you know, Cain, mm-hmm. and then he doesn't want your produce.
Yeah.
He wants your meat.
Mm-hmm. There's a
God loves beef.
There's a good meme I saw on the internet, and I promulgated it. There was a guy standing up, and it looks like in Jesus's time, he's standing on the rock, and he's got a lot of people around him, and he says, "I am God's messenger," and the people are asking him, "Well, what's God's message?" God wants you to give his messenger money, and that's been repeated down the ages at nauseam.
Indeed. The church, they have so much money. It's a really good business plan,
mm-hmm.
even though no
taxes,
I hate it.
Too.
Yes. Okay, let's get back to the commandments, number 8. Thou shalt not offer blood sacrifice with leaven. So God definitely has, is leaven another, is that
like
another type of bread?
It's a kind of a yeast. Leavening, it makes the yeast, the bread rise. Unleavened bread is like a pancake.
Right.
Or even
so less, leaven.
Like a taco.
God hates fungus, apparently.
Yeah.
Especially ones that.
I think it's all about living sparsely yeah. and doing without. But who knows? This was Jewish teachings a long time ago
yeah,
of their religious order. So.
Even though the history is probably really cool, I say I like leaven. I'm a pro leaven person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but it sounds like a good position to be in. All right,
If we've got any listeners out there who might want to call in and comment on any of this stuff, the number is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And Wombat, feel free to jump in if you have any comments and or questions as he's going through this.
Yeah, I didn't cool. introduce myself. Hey, Wombat. I'm Tom.
Hey, good to see you, Thomas Payne. I always want to talk about you. Face to face.
Me too. All right. So number 9, we're almost done. First fruits of thy shall bring unto the house. So basically, whatever you make, the first of it, whatever probably mostly produce, let's stack it to the temple. Let it rot there. It's a waste, but let's let it rot because God needs a show. And then number 10, this is the best one. And this is the one, it's so ridiculous, and especially if God is eternal and God knows throughout all time, he could come up with something that would be a rule that would last forever. But this is how specific and stupid this last one is. It says, please, Moses, whatever you do, whatever you do, don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. So don't boil a goat in its mother's milk.
Do not see a goat in its mother's milk.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know if that's a good, like a really good marinating
but this was
technique.
This was a commandment from God.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I haven't done that, so I'm good on that one,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Most cooks probably, because that sounds disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everyone knows a good marinade has at least soy sauce in it. Not milk, but I'm not sure. Yep, and those are the commandments, and these commandments are supposed to be profound, right? They're supposed to last from eternity, and a lot of the arguments come from these commandments is, well, you're taking it out of context. This was really good for them at the time. It was really good survival rules for them at the time. But why is God confined to the time of age if he's eternal and he knows all? These commandments should be better. And so if you look online for morals of today, and even, you don't even have to look online. You could probably write down better Ten Commandments yourself. It would be very, very easily. And there's this one passage that I listened to from Letter of a Christian Nation by Sam Harris. It's like Jainism. And one of the passages in there was, do not injure, abuse, oppress, enslave, insult, torment, torture, or kill any creature or living being. It surpasses the morality of the Bible easily.
Right.
For sure.
Well, and this is only the second set of yeah. Ten Commandments, so.
This is the third and final. This one was.
Okay, we've got to take a break for a station identification. We usually play a song at the bottom of the hour. So I'm going to interrupt you right there, and we'll come back to it. Keep that train of thought, though, and mark your place if you need to. And let me give a station identification. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's September 12th, 2018. We have Thomas Paine with us, and we have with a Wombat on the line. Say hi, Wombat. We'll get you in the conversation soon, I promise. But for the break song, we're going to play Apocalyptic Love Song by Shelley Siegel. We'll take a break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.
One day the sun is going to die. For us it means no more sunsets to the universe. Just one less star in the sky. And almost all who ever lived have already died. Countless stories of love and war and hope and pain now silent play side by side. Yes, I understand that my whole life is just a blink of an eye in the history of the earth. One billion years, the oceans will dry, while somehow life may continue, it will not be known to you and I. To think we are so important is an obvious crime. We know that we are specks on a tiny dot.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Doubter 5, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I can tell you how to connect with some of them. If you've got a pencil handy, I can give you that right now. There's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. We're in our 16th year. We have almost 900 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. So so the Knoxville Atheist. Or you can join us in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. It's for happy hour where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Excuse me. Thank
Definitely
you.
The punching part. That would be unfairable. With
yeah, but we never talk about the punching part. Yeah. It's like Fight Club. By the way, if you live in Knoxville, you should go to, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Another large atheist free-thinking group here in Knoxville is Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around longer than the ASK has. They've been around 20 years. They have biweekly presentations and discussions in the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. For more information, go to rationalists.org and click on upcoming events. Then there's our TV show, which just went off the air 5 minutes ago. It kind of clashes with our radio show, but these are the time slots we are dealt. The atheist call-in TV show is called Free Thought Forum, and it's on every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. Or you can go to YouTube and find some of our archived shows on there where a fan has been recording and posting them. Go to YouTube and look for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or the radio show, just come to an Ask a Meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. Ooh. And if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you can always reach us live right here in the studio at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. Lines are open. Okay, what were we talking about there, Thomas Paine?
We're kind of talking about of how God kind of messed up his chance to do a lot of good work in the morality world, but he didn't. And so one of the things that is easy to do if you're human is to kind of think of what's a really good way to treat everyone, especially the golden rule. I don't want to do anything to someone that I wouldn't want to be done to me, even though that could be a little messy if you use it as a constitution, but it's a pretty good place to start. And so these are, I'm going to read off some of the Ten Commandments given by Christopher Hitchens. If you ever
an atheist Ten Commandments?
I would say just good good commandments for everyone to follow, and yes, they're secular.
How about 10 suggestions for living a good life type of thing?
Exactly.
I don't really go along with commandments that much anyway.
It just went with the pattern
of the
did.
Show, okay.
Right? You have to stick with the theme.
I'm guilty myself of that.
So these are now suggestions and some good ideas, ideas that can you can easily see that a human brain can come up with better morals than God. Do not condemn people by their ethnicity or color, number one. Number two, do not even ever use people as private property, a.k.a. do not own slaves. Slavery is bad. The Bible is really bad about telling us that. Despise those who use violence or threat of it in sexual relations. Hide your face and weep if you dare to harm any child. So be ashamed if you try to harm a child. Children are supposed to be protected by adults, not abused. Do not condemn anyone for their inborn human nature. This would go for the gay community, it would go for the trans community, it would go for anyone that is who they are, and we shouldn't be judged for being who they are at all. Be aware that two are an animal and independent of a web in nature. So basically, we are animals, and we should act better than ourselves. Do not imagine that you can escape judgment if you rob people or false prospectus rather than with a knife. I have no idea what that means.
Don't swindle people. Don't rob people with a false prospectus.
Yeah.
I can't say any better than you did.
See, Richard Hitchens was very eloquent. Right. Mm-hmm. He was a very learned man.
Yeah.
Full of vocab that I am not used to using.
Yeah, what he's saying is you can rob people just as easily with a contract as you can with a gun.
Yes.
So don't do that.
So don't be a horrible capitalistic person. All right. Probably turn off your cell phones when you're talking to someone because that's rude and no one likes it, especially today. And if you're in a movie theater, double that. If I see someone with a cell phone in a movie theater, that's just like the worst thing that happens in my day. That's just rude. All right. Denounce jihadists and crusaders, basically all terrorists and psychopaths, criminals with ugly delusions. You know, we should not support them at all. And be willing to renounce a god or any religion or any holy commandment if any of these commandments contradict any of the above commandments. So don't ever be satisfied with some type of ancient scriptural commandment, especially if they give you a bad feeling and they do not support what we know now to be better morals. And that was all a paraphrase of Christopher Hitchens, The Great Hitch, which I recommend people reading his book, God's Not Great.
Right, excellent book.
Yes.
Wombat, what do you think of that, the secular Ten Commandments, or Ten Suggestions?
I'm wondering, I always wonder why it's exactly Ten Commandments, and why not, like, 11 or 9? What is it about the number 10 that we find so attractive that we feel like we need to have exactly 10?
Well, I think
the digits.
I think Hitchens did it just to follow the theme of the Bible, but there is something nice and satisfying about having a top 10 list. There's a lot of top 10 lists out there. I have no idea why.
Sure.
And if you could talk a little louder.
There's also a lot of serial killers out there.
Could you be a little more volumetic?
Yeah.
Well, we're having a hard time hearing you.
Like, it's a nice thing to drop the ball, but I think George Carlin did like a really, really nice summary of the Ten Commandments once from the Bible. We just basically dropped it down to like 3 because he's like basically the first 5 don't even matter. They're just basically like, you know, self-praise of God. And then a lot of them can just be condensed to like the same thing of like, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
And then, and from there, like everything else just kind of like, hey, let me think whatever I want to think. If I like my neighbor's wife, I like my neighbor's wife. But as far as like I'm not acting on it, it's totally good. But then he got it down to like just about 3, which is pretty good. But for the most part, they do seem to be, there does seem to be a love of like authoritative lists. And they tend to always come in like a top 10 format.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there was an, anything like to that. Do you know if there was like, some like weird human thing about that?
I just feel like it's the beginning of single digits and the ending at the transition to double digits, and it feels like a complete story. That's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, there may have been other Ten Commandments before that, you know, the law of Hammurabi and some other earlier laws that may have been like 10 in, that came in tens. So they could have been following that as well.
About, like numerology, was zodiac signs are 10 or is that 12?
12.
Yeah, 12. There's sevens also in the Bible. I don't know where 40 comes from. That was also overdone in the Bible.
Bill and Ted in their excellent adventure got the commandments down to 1.
Be
excellent to each other. That would work.
Nice.
Yeah.
They're actually coming with, I think, Bill and Ted 3.
Really? Cool. What,
let me ask, yeah, that's true. They are coming with Bill and Ted 3. I'm looking forward to it. I'm wondering, though, if there was someone that really strongly believed that, you know, the Ten Commandments were a message from God, and that the reason why we don't interpret them in a practical way is because we're imperfect beings. How could we go about convincing them that they might be mistaken? What would be a good way to do that?
Convince who that they might be mistaken? Who?
So that the Ten Commandments may not necessarily be...
Oh, well, you can start off with one thing. You know, there's supposed to be this wonderful moral decalogy that tells us, you know, how we should live our lives. But heck, the first 4 don't have anything to do with treating each other. It's all commandments about how we're supposed to relate to God. And most of the other ones are punishable by death. I mean, pretty much all of them are punishable by death if you look at the Bible and read the punishments for disobeying the commandments. But, I mean, do we really want to kill somebody for disrespecting their parent? Or for, wanting your neighbor's ass?
Yeah.
You know, their donkey, their mule, whatever. I mean, all of these are way over the top. And they're not, I mean, the one that really works is, you know, well, you don't want to lie, but do you want to kill people for lying? Well, there was one.
Yeah, if you like goats especially, that would probably.
Thou shalt not kill. That's about the only one that might be worthy of a death penalty. But all of the others, is, you know, the punishment is far outweighs the sin, or outweighs the the trespass, as it were.
Yeah, and if it's in self-defense, obviously you need to kill. If we have war, I mean, that's, and obviously God is not shy of killing. Mm-hmm. But to kind of go back to what you said earlier, is that if you look at the Ten Commandments, like a person on your first date, you know, and they say, "I'm really, really jealous." That's a sign, like, hey, that's a red flag. Get out that date. Mm-hmm.
Should be the last one.
Already, but people know that jealousy is not good.
But just to play devil's advocate for just a quick little bit, if I was hearing those arguments and I strongly already believe, if I was in a state where I already believe, it's easy enough for me to dissuade your criticism as, or like most people's criticism, particularly atheists, and I'm with you on the same boat, but it's easy enough to dissuade criticism that people have against the Ten Commandments by saying, it's made by a perfect God, talking to imperfect people. So therefore, you know, your qualms aren't really justified. It's a matter of fact that it was made by God.
Right.
How can you go about convincing them that they weren't true?
Okay,
that may not necessarily be the case.
God can create the universe. He can perform all these miracles. You don't think He made our minds? He knows how. He knows every person's heart, right? So don't you think He can convey what His message is in a way that they cannot mess this up? And if they do mess it up, don't you think He can correct it? He punishes people anyway.
Well, what comes to mind on me, in my thoughts, is from Atheist Experience in one of their most recent shows, they went into this a little bit and said, taking a line from Star Trek, what does God need with a spaceship? And we'll take it one step farther. What does God need with a book? I mean, if He's omniscient and all-powerful and everywhere at the same time, why can't He just be with us? Why can't He just talk to us and tell us and explain things to us? Why is He this major missing God? I mean, where is He? Why doesn't He have anything to do with this? And how come the only way you ever hear anything about this God is from another human? You know, why does He need a book? That's another thing. Why did they put down these Ten Commandments when He could have just shown up and told us? And showed us how, you know, He would not tolerate us breaking these Ten Commandments instead of letting us do it forever and then punishing us after we're dead.
Is that satisfying?
So I'm wondering, I hear what you're saying. Like, these are really good questions. I think especially if you're in a debate format or if you're in a show, like, getting someone who believes in this to stop and maybe, like, stumble and not maybe answer those questions appropriately would definitely maybe, like, enlighten some people who are listening in the conversation. But if you're on a one-on-one conversation with someone, and I figure if you bring up, hey, why doesn't God do all these things, it's super easy, at least from my perspective, to just say, well, listen, God's plan, you're not going to understand that.
Yeah, he's mysterious.
Almost done. You need the Holy Spirit in order to, like, really interpret it. Or it's definitely been open to a lot of people who just opened up and truly believe. Are you willing to truly believe? Like, there are a lot of ingrained in the idea of the religion. I'm wondering, my only question is, what is a good method to get someone to be more open-minded by the idea that they could be wrong about the source of the Ten Commandments?
Okay, I guess there's a few ways you can go about that. The first thing that comes to mind is that it wasn't rare for God to talk to people. You know, He talked to Moses, so that means that if Moses is pure enough to talk to God, then he was a righteous man full of the Holy Spirit, what have you, all right? And then they were in stone for a reason, to be unchanging.
And why did He give us three sets of them?
Yeah.
I mean, why did He give us the first two sets?
Right. So you can say that He's not very good at reproducing the same articles, but you can also say that if God was so perfect and He had such a good relationship with Moses and these were set in stone, then He must have made sure that these were correct. Also, you can say, even though that, let's say Moses was slightly corrupted and he messed these up in favor of him, we know, everyone should know, that slavery is wrong, that rape is wrong, that men and women should be treated equally, and don't abuse children, and maybe, hey, wash your hands often because there's germs out there.
Right.
They didn't know anything about germ theory. And so none of these commandments gave us things that would have helped us now. The only things that helped us now were discoveries from science. And so if He would have mentioned anything that could have predicted the future in a way, or been like, For instance, if he said something about there are tiny things that you cannot see that cause disease, do this. They may not be able to comprehend what they are, but at least they would know.
It's not demons.
Yeah, and it's not demons.
Right.
Then be like, okay, I'm going to try to
illustrate the question that I have, maybe just slightly different. My conclusion is that which isn't actually my conclusion, I'm just bringing it aside.
Right.
My conclusion is that Bible is given to us by God, who is perfect, and all of our faults with it are a result of us being imperfect. That is my conclusion. Do you think that bringing up faults with the conclusion that I have is a effective way to convince me that I'm wrong?
In other words, I know where you're going because, you know, I've done a million shows with you, and you're talking about street epistemology and attacking the method rather than the conclusion. So you're saying, how can the method for reaching the conclusion is faulty?
More or less, like, in this sense, there's me, the person, the conclusion that I've reached, which is God made the Bible, or God made the Ten Commandments, and he gave it to us and we're imperfect. And then there's the method that I use to reach that conclusion. And what I'm asking is, if you're trying to convince me, like in a one-on-one conversation with no audience, that I might be wrong, is bringing up contradictions about my conclusion or attacking the conclusion, which I very strongly personally identify with, a good way to open up my mind and make me more amenable to the idea that I might be mistaken?
No one likes to be told that they're wrong, so I would say no. If I was talking to someone one-on-one, I would probably just ask them why they know it's true.
Ooh, that's a great question.
How they know it's true.
That is a fantastic question. Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So if I said, well, I know it's true because the Bible said so, then where can we go from there?
And it's like a lot of people say that about Islam in the Quran. People say that about the Vedas and Hindu. They all say the same thing because they use that one source.
Right.
So these are how do questions. They know that because these aren't wrong? Or they're not true.
Or sometimes they'll say faith, and then you can say, well, faith will give these other religions the truth about their religion, but it'd be opposite of your truth. How do you square that?
Right, and the reason why I like this line of question is because now we're not necessarily attacking God, which I very much would be crazy about.
Or their conclusion.
Or any, like, the inconsistencies of the Bible. You're bringing up a fundamental thing that, even when we're done with the conversation, I'm still stuck with. Like, there are a lot of other people who have faith that says their Bible's true. Why is it only okay for me to say that I believe my holy book and have that be a legitimate reason? For other people who do the same thing too, that's not legitimate enough. What's special about my book? And I could say, well, it's the book that I was raised with. And a good, you know, comeback with that is like, well, is everything that you're raised with necessarily true? Like, there are other people who are raised with other kinds of holy books. Is that necessarily make it true? Like, is the book that you're raised with necessarily always true? Or could it be possible that someone could be raised with a holy text that might actually tell them it's not actually correct or something that's not actually accurate? And these are, like, really good questions that could be helpful with at least instilling the concept of doubt to people who are absolutely confident of a conclusion without attacking their conclusion or without attacking them. And that's like my only two cents.
Yeah,
I think the things you're bringing up are really valid, especially if you're in a debate or an argument. And I think these are really good points to bring up, definitely in conversations. But like in an audience with just one-on-one, whether you're talking to the person who actually holds these ideas, I think it's important that we realize that there are alternative methods that reach very distinct goals, particularly when it comes to trying to convince the person who actually believes that mind.
Yeah, but what if their method is just simply the Bible? They believe the Bible. The Bible says that I believe it, or God said it, I believe it, and that's it. If you attack the method, which is their Bible, then you're basically attacking them as well. I mean, they identify so strongly with that.
I hear what you're saying. So normally what we do is you can understand a claim. The claim is the Bible's true. And the question is, how did they determine that the Bible is true? So the Bible wouldn't necessarily be the method. It's just an aspect of a conclusion.
Yeah.
If I say the Bible's true, that's my claim. That's my conclusion. How did I determine that? Well, I read it.
Well the Holy Spirit gives you a direct line to truth.
Revelation.
I mean, how many times have I heard that? You know, the Holy Spirit tells me it's true.
Yeah.
You know, I feel it. And, you know, even no matter how many times I say feelings aren't facts, it doesn't seem to get through.
Yeah,
and
I agree with you that if you're talking to someone one-on-one and you have definitely opposing ideas about the Bible, you got to treat them with respect. And they're a person. You have to remember they're a person. And throwing facts at them probably just get them angry. And I agree with you. But there's times for that, but there's also times for mocking, which is one of my favorite things to do. And there's also times for just like showing the contradictions in the Bible and how silly it is. However, right, if absolutely. You really want to change someone's mind, I agree with you. It's easy. It's better to probe, and so they know why they believe something. And once they figure out why they believe something, they may figure out that that's not a very good position or a way to believe in something.
I also agree with the idea of there's going to be many different kinds of situations where we'll have the ability to talk about the Bible, and we're going to have many different kinds of audiences made up of many different kinds of people. We should at least be aware of the different tools that we have available to us and know which one of them might be effective for what particular situation that we're in.
Yeah.
I agree.
And there may be people that would be ineffective to use anything at all. They're so entrenched. But at the same time, you never know. We all came from that background, pretty much, or 90% of us did. So, you know, when I hear people say you can't argue somebody out of a position that they were not argued into, I tell them, you know, most of us in the atheist movement and most of us in the Atheist Society of Knoxville used to be there. We need to just have patience and talk to them and show them how irrational our religious belief is on whatever level we can communicate to them. But, you know, don't give up hope. You know, it's the future of the world, basically, is to have to leave religion behind to be able to unify.
It's definitely a skill that you have to work on. My girlfriend tells me all the time, even when we're getting this regular disagreements about things, just not really a serious argument, she says, I come off as very aggressive, so I have to remember to calm myself down, talk with a softer voice.
I've been hearing that for a while.
I'm a natural firebrand, I guess. But talking to someone seriously about these things is definitely a learned skill. Do it a lot, be patient, and that's definitely something hard for me to do, is the patience thing.
Yep.
I can also say, hey, when I was learning how to do, like, this hobby where I go out and talk to people about the religious beliefs and help them, you know, more or less get out of it to an extent, I had the worst time starting because all I had in my you know, book was Atheist Experience Counter Apologetic. And so, like, when someone gave me an argument, I knew the exact right argument to throw back at them. But the thing was, that wasn't really, like, really talking to them. It was talking as if there was an audience listening to us. And yeah, in retrospect, I sounded great. I sounded like I was an asshole. But if someone was listening, they'd be like, yeah, this guy knows what it is. But the person I'm talking to is completely being shut down. And so, I would say it's cool what you're bringing up. You can always keep those cards in your head, and then you meet another fellow atheist. You're like, and check this out. He's like, yeah, I got other jokes too. But if you're in a debate and you're trying to win over the audience, boom, throw those things out. Those are great things. Mocking is like a great way to like win some audience support.
Yeah.
But there are other aspects out there that you could be just as good at if you're willing to recognize that you're in a different kind of situation and that there's a different strategy that's very effective. And what I found is that people tend to very closely identify with their conclusion. They throw a lot of ego in themselves and they throw a lot of ego in the conclusion. And as a result, they basically almost like the same thing. That's why people are like, hey, I'm an atheist. I'm a Baptist. But just to close up, the attacking the method or targeting your questions toward the method that they use to get to their conclusions, exactly how you did before, it's a great way to just open them up to the idea. And don't go in with the idea of convincing them to change their mind. Just go in the idea of having a conversation about it, because the more that they're able to talk about it, the method that they use to reach there, the sooner they'll be able to realize that it's not as reliable as they once thought.
Right.
And with that, they can't be as confident. Even when you end the conversation on a positive note, that's something that they'll constantly think about. They can't get rid of that.
Right. Wombat, we got about 3 minutes left. Would you like to take a minute and tell us about your YouTube channel? On Street Epistemology?
Sure. Yeah, just a quick thing. So I have a channel called Let's Chat on YouTube. It's about street epistemology, but really just having conversations with people. I use jokes. I use building rapport. I use a lot of conversational techniques to talk to random strangers at a table that I set up in parks or at protest events. I'm going to a KKK invitation recruitment rally.
Oh, no.
This week, we'll see how that works out. No, I'll be okay.
In costume?
I hope it'll be okay. No.
That's a good idea.
And Well, see, I believe that I can talk to anyone about anything, and I have the table there just to have the opportunity, and I use street epistemology as an aspect to maintain conversation and help people who have very strong beliefs be a bit more open to doubt. That's Let's Chat on YouTube. You can just check it by searching Let's Chat. And I'm also got invited to write for the Atheist Community Boston's newsletter.
Oh, cool.
I'll be
very
writing
some
articles in that paper about street epistemology. So I'm really excited about that, and I'm really glad to talk with you, Thomas. And I thought all the lists that you brought up was really on topic and really funny. And I appreciate the back and forth that we had afterwards too. It was really great talking to you. I hope you can do that.
Yeah, you too.
Final
Thanks
words,
for praise.
Thomas.
It's always okay to attack bad ideas. Just remember, like Wombat said, don't attack the person.
Attack the methods. Because if he's come to a bad conclusion, then he's probably got bad methods. And he's not as tied to the methods as he is to his conclusions. And
exactly.
This is Digital Free Thought Radio, WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Mark this channel on your dial and join us next week. And let me see if I can find our outro.
There my girlfriend's
is.
Listening. I want to say hi.
Okay.
I forgot to do that.
Hi.
Hi, his girlfriend.
Hi,
remember,
girlfriend.
don't sweat going to hell. Everybody's going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it. See you next week.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.